मोकम करोति वाचालं पंगुम लंघयते गिरिम यत्कृपातं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं परमानंदमाधवं श्रीचैतन्य ईश्वरं. So we are reading from Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 33 to 35. So we are reading, Text 31 and 32. Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 33, 35. Sorry, 31, 32. Yes. So in this text, 31 and 32, now it is mentioned about how was Amrish Maharaj actually practicing devotional service. That's what is mentioned here. So let's go through this now. Translation. Following the regulative principles of Mahabhishek, Maharaj Amrish performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia, and then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands and other paraphernalia for worship of the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who were free from material desires. Now this particular shloka, or these two shlokas, 31 and 32, they actually talk about what was Amrish Maharaj doing. So let's try to understand what was Amrish Maharaj doing in the forest along with the Ekadashi Vrata that he was trying to observe. He was doing deity worship. He was worshipping the deity of Lord Krishna. Now, there are many people in this world who say that deity worship is bogus, deity worship is not correct, and so many things. Now, they go on speaking so many things. In fact, there are many religions also which say that these Hindus are bogus. These people are not doing the right thing. In fact, I remember I had gone for one conference. This was the time when I was doing my engineering. I think it was Nagpur. So, I had gone there for a conference, and then, you know, we finished the conference and then we were waiting for the train to go back to Mumbai. So at that time, one person came from other religion. And then he was trying to convince me and my friend that you should leave deity worship. You should tell your parents that we'll not worship any vigraha from today. And we'll just do namaz and nothing else. Now, me and my friend both were practicing devotional service. We both started practicing devotional service. So, we both knew who this person was and what was he trying to do. So, at that time, he started blaspheming the deity worship, the rituals and other things that we follow. See, one thing we have to understand is, when it comes to Vedic scriptures, our Shastra, complete knowledge is given. In fact, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, after knowing this, there is nothing more to be known. Whereas when it comes to Bible, when it comes to Quran and even other scriptures, it talks about, I want to give you more. The prophet is saying, I want to give you more, but you're not eligible. You're not qualified to receive it. That is the reason you see in most of the other so-called religions, they are bona fide, no doubt. But the form of the Lord is not mentioned anywhere. In fact, they just know that the Lord is powerful. He is the controller. He is merciful, but they don't know the form of the Lord. Because the prophet themselves, they have given their own scriptures, be it Bible or Quran, that you are not yet qualified to understand the inner aspects or the inner details regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But whereas when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very clear. He is saying it very clearly that there is nothing more to know after this, you know, what I am telling you, Arjuna. So in this way, we understand whatever is given in Vedic scriptures, what we are currently following, by the mercy of our acharyas, is the ultimate. There shouldn't be any doubt about this. No doubt about this at all. We should be so confident that just by practicing this, we can come back to Godhead. There's no question of, oh, that religion is doing this, this religion is doing this. Or even in Hindu community, there are many, many people doing so many things. But we have to be very confident that we are following what Krishna has given and what our acharyas have given. And this will actually take us come back to Godhead. Because many, many people in the past have attained Krishna just by following this process. And I guess in the Sunday's session, we saw that this process works. So many qualities without our notice will manifest. We might not have seen Krishna till now, but there are so many qualities, you know, without our notice have manifested. And there will be so many qualities which will manifest. And there will be so much of bliss in our life when we start practicing devotional service. This is the proof that the process works. And so there are different angas of bhakti which are given in our scriptures. The 64 angas of bhakti. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu it is mentioned. And those are compressed into 9 and those are given in Srimad Bhagavatam by Prahlad Maharaj. He says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. He says there are 9 processes or 9 angas of bhakti to attain Krishna. What are those? He says Shravanam. Shravanam means hearing attentively. Kirtanam is singing the glories of the Lord about his name, form, qualities and pastimes. Then the third thing he says is Vishnu Smaranam, remembering the Lord. Then Pada Sevanam and Archanam Vandanam. So all these three are done to the deity of the Lord. So Archa Vigraha Seva. And then the rest are even more high level, which says Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Sakhyam. Then Atma Nivedanam. So in the worship in the mode of servantship, the worship in the mode of friendship, and the worship in the mode of complete surrender. So, you know, we have different levels of worship also. So for us, as of now, let's try to understand about this particular Anga of Archa Vigraha Seva, what Maharaj Ambarish is doing. Now, when it comes to deity worship, we are not worshipping a stone, wood or a metal. These deities are carved very properly in accordance with Shastra. How Lord looks, what is his form. And there are people who are pure, who actually carve these deities. Shilpikar. So they have a different sampradaya, Shilpikar. So they have their own sampradaya, which they have got from their forefathers, fathers, etc., etc. And they have got this knowledge and the art and devotion of carving the deities according to Shastra. Now these deities, when they are carved according to Shastra, they are bona fide. But till now, the Lord has not manifested in the deity. Then there's something called as Pran Pratishtha that happens. So it is a ceremony for, you know, good 3-4 days, and a lot of things happen in this ceremony. So it's a great detail. You know, someday we'll get into it. And then when this Pran Pratishtha is done, so the devotee, he invokes the Lord in this beautiful form, which is made up of matter. And by the mercy of the devotee, the Lord manifests in that particular form. So that is the deity. That is called Archa Vigraha. So now Lord is personally present. Now the question is, how come the Lord is coming in matter? He's coming only for one reason. And that reason is, he has come to accept our service. Now you just tell me, how can we worship Krishna? Now suppose you want to feed Krishna, you want to dress Krishna, you want to do what Mother Yashoda, Radharani and other gopis and gopas have done. How will we do? Because Krishna is Sachidananda Vigraha. Away, we cannot catch him, we cannot touch him, because we are stuck in this bodily conception of life. We think we are this body and we are not great devotees also. How can we do this? We cannot serve Krishna in his original form, in his original spiritual form. He's Chidghan, he's completely spiritual. There's not even a tinge of matter in him, not even a tinge of matter. So he personally comes and he manifests in the form which is perceivable to all of us through our senses. Only when we perceive the Lord through our senses, we'll be able to worship the Lord. Or else we'll just keep saying, Lord is impersonal, Lord is nirakar, etc., etc., etc. And if he is into that category of nirakar and impersonal, how can we have relationship with Krishna? Because till now, from so many lifetimes, we have been having a relationship with a person, not with anyone else, not with any imperson. Right? Like, for example, you have been asked, how does your spouse looks like? My spouse is impersonal. Then how do you have a relationship? How do you have your relationship with kids? Now, in this life, we are human beings. So we have this personal relationship. In fact, you'll not believe, even when it comes to animals, they are persons. They have a form and they have a relationship with each other. So you can imagine, from so many lifetimes we have been doing this. So it's very natural for us to relate with a person, with a personality, and not with something impersonal, right? So only for this reason, Lord comes in this wonderful form of Archa Vigraha. And Archa Vigraha accepts our service. Lord in this form of Archa Vigraha, he accepts our service. we can do the same service what Mother Yashoda, Radharani and all the gopis and gopas were doing. Or Kaushalya, Lakshman and Dasharath, all of them were doing. So in this form, we can dress the Lord, we can decorate the Lord, we can cook for the Lord and offer Him. We can bathe the Lord, we can put Him to rest. So many services we can do. This is what is called as Archa Vigraha Seva, and it's completely bona fide. Completely bona fide. And not only in one scripture. So I talked from Srimad Bhagavatam, that what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. Even when it comes to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is mentioned, Chaitanya Chaitamrita, it is mentioned, different Puranas, it is mentioned. So Archa Vigraha Seva is mentioned at different places. In this age of Kali, our Yuga Dharma is chanting. Chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is what is Yuga Dharma. But to this chanting will be enhanced when we actually worship the Archa Vigraha. So you see, in different temples and even in the houses, devotees have a nice altar. You might not have a Vigraha, but you can have photos and, you know, different photos, and we can nicely decorate them, garland them, do aarti and things like that, offer boga. So all these things can be done. So when we start doing this, especially for Grihastha devotees, the ones who are married and having a very good family, for them, you know, it is very, very important. Because in the house, when you have a big altar and you have nice photos of the lordships, be it the snapshot of a deity existing already in the temple, or be it a painting or whatever. So at that time, what happens is you are reminded again and again, who is the owner of the house? This is what we are reminded of. Whenever we see the altar, this is what we'll be reminded of. And this is very, very important. Very, very important. So at that time, the enjoyment and tendency which is there, or feeling that I am the authority, I am the doer, that doership mentality, etc. will come down. Because as soon as we see the altar, we realize, oh, he's the Supreme Personality. He is doing everything. He is the master of the house. Now the husband and wife, they are not the masters, nor the kids. The Lord is the master. Right. So in this way, Lord comes personally to accept the service of his devotees. Now, since you people are not asking question, I'll ask you a question. Please answer. So if Lord is really present in the deity or in this deity form, then how come these Mughals came and broke the deities? Yes. How come they came and they broke? Why Lord didn't manifest himself? Why didn't he kill them with the sharp nails or some weapons or whatever, Shankha Chakra, Gada? Why? There are many deities, right? Many deities, Mughals have done that. Lord's desire, yes, this is the Brahmastra. This is the Brahmastra for every question. Lord came to take service from us and not to show his power. So, okay. What else? Because they didn't see the deity as Lord. Okay. So only when you see the deity as Lord, the Lord is there. If you don't see the deity as Lord, Lord is not there. He reciprocates the way we see him. Okay. He wants this. Lord has come to enjoy with us. Okay. Kali Yuga. So the actual answer is this one. That what Hemant Prabhu has mentioned. So Lord, when Lord comes, he comes for a particular purpose. Now in every form of his, in every incarnation of his, he doesn't do the same activity. You take up any of his incarnation, Lord Ram, Narsingha, then Krishna, or any of his. So he has got different things that he does, different leelas he does. This is one of the incarnation of the Lord. Archa Vigraha is one of the incarnation of the Lord. And this incarnation, Lord has taken only for one reason, to accept service from us. In this particular form, he is not there to show his prowess, to show his opulence, to show his might. He's not there for this purpose. He has come only to accept the service. So he's almost like a child. When he comes in the form of Archa Vigraha, he's almost like a child. So how does a child behave? So if he's there at home, if parents give him to eat, he'll eat. Or else he has to fast if parents don't give. Similar is the case with our deities, with the photos and, you know, the altar that we maintain in the house. If we don't feed the Lord, he'll not eat. One of my relatives was telling me when I was worshipping my deities. So he's saying that why you need to offer bhoga every day? He's there in so many temples. They're feeding him chappan bhog there. So why you have to feed here every day? Once in a while you can do. See, one thing we have to understand, when Lord comes to our place, he has come personally for us to accept our service. If we don't feed him, he'll remain fasting. He'll fast. He'll do Ekadashi on that day, even when it is not Ekadashi. So he'll fast that particular day. So when he comes personally only for us. So the person or the deity or the photo that is there in our house is different than the deity and the photo is there in the neighbor's house. They are not the same. They are different personalities of who have come to accept our service. This is what is the understanding. So if we keep him fasting, he'll remain fasting. And if we keep him open, awake, he'll remain awake. If we put him to sleep always, he'll, you know, remain sleeping always. So it depends what service we are offering him. And only for this reason, Lord comes to accept our service. And just imagine how merciful the Lord is. If he don't come in this form, we'll never be able to understand his transcendental feature. Never. And never ever we'll be able to serve, know him, in this conditioned state of our life where we are not even convinced that we are spirit soul. Right? So in this way, we see that this Archa Vigraha Seva is a benediction for all of us. And when we do this Archa Vigraha Seva, be it the service of the photo of the Lord or be it the actual Vigraha form. So by the way, when it comes to Vigraha, there are some specific rules and regulations that has to be followed. So not everyone can do that. So you have to contact your mentors if you want to do. But photos everyone can have. So when we are doing either of it, they're one and the same, not much difference. In photo, you might have less service. For Archa Vigraha, you have more services. For the deity form, you have more services. So in this way, we see that this is a benediction for all of us. This is a benediction for all of us that Lord has come to accept our service. And when we do the service to him, automatically we have a nice relationship that establishes. I have one of my family friend, a very senior devotee. So I've seen they have got Radha Krishna Vigraha in their house. So you know what they do? When they get some invitation for marriage or when they get invitation for some birthday or whatever, first, they will cook nice feast only for the deities, for their Radha Krishna. Their deity's name is Radha Neelmani. So they'll cook for them and then only they'll go out. And if they're going out for a marriage, they are dressing themselves gorgeously. First, they will dress their deities gorgeously and they'll go out. In fact, one of them will remain at home. So there are four people. So one of them will remain at home. Other three will go for the whatever, satsang or be it marriage or whatever. They'll never leave their Lord alone. So that's a different level of worship. So not all of us will be able to come to that level. But still, that I'm talking about a relationship that manifests. Now, when this relationship is there with the Lord as a family member, so it becomes very easy to do devotional service. Now, when we're chanting, we know whose names we're chanting. We're chanting the names of a person whom we know very well. Now he's a family member, you know, for all of us. So in this way, we are always conscious about the Lord when we do this Archa Vigraha Seva, right? But having said all these things, Yuga Dharma is chanting. So suppose you're not able to do Archa Vigraha Seva, due to whatever reasons. But if you're chanting the holy names, you are actually following the Yuga Dharma. So Archa Vigraha Seva was there in all the Yugas. And Archa Vigraha Seva was the Yuga Dharma in Dwapar Yuga. But Archa Vigraha Seva is throughout because it's one of the Anga of Bhakti, one of the important Anga of Bhakti, which helps the devotee to relate with the Lord. Even in Satyuga, when meditation was the Yuga Dharma, still Archa Vigraha Seva was there so that they can relate to the Lord and meditate on the form of the Lord. Similarly, Treta Yuga, so Lord Ramchandra. So Lord Ramchandra, maybe we'll discuss it during Ram Navami, but just to give you some hint. So there was one Vaishnav saint, one Brahmana, who would every single day come to the palace of Lord Ram, take his darshan, and then only he'll be taking his prasad. Or else he'll fast. If he doesn't get darshan, he'll just fast. This was his vow. Now what happened is Lord Ramchandra went to some place and he was about to go to some place. And then Lakshman told Lord Ram that there is this personality, without taking a darshan, he'll not eat. Now you are going out, so this personality will fast for sure. And he might die also. Then Lord Ram called that Brahmana. And then Lord Ram told him that I am giving you a deity which is worshipped in the lineage, in the Surya dynasty, in Raghu Vamsha, from many, many millenniums, he said. So that deity I'm giving you, and this deity is non-different than me. And you know what? That deity was actually the deity of Lord Ramchandra only. So Lord Ramchandra's deity was worshipped in the entire dynasty of his, even before his appearance. So if you remember, I had answered this question, how is it possible? So in many, many different millenniums or many, many different yugas or different universes, the Lord manifests his leelas, and his form, his pastimes already manifest. It's there already. So his worship is valid. His worship is valid even before his appearance. So now here we see in Satyuga, Maharaj Amrish is worshipping whom? The deity of Lord Krishna. So this is about deity worship. This is about deity worship. Yes. So all of us should understand. We have to be very firm. See, what I'm trying to convey is that what we are following is correct. It is bona fide. It is authentic. Just by following this, we'll go back, come back to Godhead. We'll attain Krishna this very lifetime as soon as possible. Just by following this, we shouldn't doubt any time. Am I doing it correct or not? Christians are saying this. Muslims are saying this. This Hindu devotee is saying this. This Hindu person is saying this. Am I doing it correct or not? This Mayavadi, who is an impersonalist, who doesn't believe in the form of the Lord, is saying this. Am I doing it correct? Even if the entire world says it is not correct, since Shastras is saying correct, and it is time-tested, we can never reject this particular aspect. Never. Right? So in this way, we have to understand what we are following is absolutely correct. And with that faith and with that confidence, we all have to practice devotional service every single day without fail. Never ever we should get that doubt. As soon as we get a doubt, we should talk to our superiors and clarify the doubt. Because that doubt will creep in as a worm and starts eating our entire consciousness that we have developed throughout these many days or months that we have been practicing bhakti. It will eat up. And then when the consciousness becomes low, then the person goes out of bhakti. Many, many people are there like that. Many, many people. So I made it a point there's no purport to this till I explained this Archa Vigra Seva very elaborately. If you have any doubts, you can keep posting. Now we'll move on to the pastime, what we all are waiting for. Do ISKCON is Hinduism? ISKCON is not Hinduism. There is firstly nothing called as Hinduism, by the way. We'll answer this towards the end and I'll take up this question. So, text 34 and 35. Thereafter, Maharaj Amrish satisfied all the guests who arrived at his house, especially the Brahmanas. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hoofs were covered with silver plate. All the cows were well decorated with garments and handful of milk bags. They were milked, they were mild-natured, young and beautiful, and were accompanied by their calves. After giving these cows, the king first sumptuously fed all the Brahmanas. And when they were fully satisfied, he was about to observe the end of Ekadashi with their permission by breaking the fast. Exactly at that time, however, so our new character is entering. Durvasa Muni, the great and powerful mystic, appeared on the scene as an uninvited guest. We'll discuss about Durvasa before that. So even in the previous text, you see, he said he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate Brahmanas who were free from material desires. And here he is giving charity to the Brahmanas. Now we have to understand that Krishna himself says that one who worships me or one who is devotee of mine is actually not a devotee. The one who is a devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee, he says. So Krishna gives a lot of importance to his devotees. In fact, it will come in the future verses. If at all, we'll be able to cover those verses. So it will come in the future verses, how Krishna gives importance to his devotees. So this charity which is given here is very, very important. So 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate. Anyone would like to try this? Whose hooves were covered with silver plate. We don't have gold ornaments to wear. Here the cows are decorated with gold and silver. So this charity aspect is very important. In fact, it is given that the dharma of the householders is to give charity. Like for example, dharma of a brahmachari is to do swadhyaya. He has to study scriptures a lot. In fact, everyone has to study scriptures, but brahmacharis have to study scriptures a lot. That is what is their dharma. When it comes to grahasthas, their dharma is to give charity. And when it comes to vanaprasthas, their dharma is to do tapa, austerity. And when it comes to sannyasis, the dharma is to go around and preach the message all around. So preaching is for everyone again. But for sannyasis exclusively, they have to dedicate their entire life for preaching the message of Gita. So now when it comes to dharma of grahasthas, giving charity is very important. In fact, shastras say, now how to give charity. So it is said, before a grahastha devotee, a married person, a householder, before he has his dinner or a meal, he has to go on the road and shout loudly, anyone hungry on the street? And then many people might come, and only after feeding all of them, again he has to go and ask, is anyone still hungry? And more people might come, so he has to feed them. Again he has to go and ask, anyone still hungry? And if no one comes at that time, it's understood no one is hungry. Now he is ready. Now he can have the prasadam, if it is remaining. Now see, we cannot do all this. Now it's very difficult. So it will be a joke if you go on the road and call people like this. But the thing is, at least some donation should be given to temples. Some charity should be done to the temples. So this is a very, very important aspect. Charity to the brahmanas, charity to devotees, charity to renunciants. So this thing has to be done by grahastha devotees. At least once in a month, some charity can be done, some donation can be given. And we can invite devotees home and we can feed them prasadam. Even that is a charity, so that can be done. So this is the dharma of grahasthas. This has to be done by every grahastha devotee. So if we feel that we are a grahastha and we have to do this, so this is the dharma. So by this, what happens? Why should we do it? Because for a grahastha devotee, so he'll be very much attached to everything that he has around, starting with money. Yes, everything. So when we part money as a donation, so what happens is the attachment to that reduces. When we invite people at home, and it is said or it is recommended that when we invite devotees home, husband and wife should menially serve them, should put nicely this plates. No, they should first make everyone sit. In fact, in olden days, and even now they do, when the guru comes home, first they will do Pada Puja. They will wash, both husband and wife will wash the feet, and then nicely worship the guru. In fact, there are places where, even in Bangladesh, there are devotees still following this. Our ISKCON devotees do this. That even now, when the Indian devotees go to Bangladesh, these Bangladeshi devotees literally humble our Indian devotees. So what they will do is, first they'll call them, they'll make them sit on a raised asan, wash their feet, worship their feet. And now, this is not there in India as of now, right? No one does this, but there they're following. And then they'll make them sit on a raised asan, serve them prasadam very nicely. And not to the fullest, not till their neck is filled, they'll serve them prasadam. And when they cook, they don't cook one or two items. It is, a few of our devotees had gone, so they were describing that minimum some 30, 40 items they'll cook just for those two, three devotees who have come. And they'll feed them sumptuously. And then they'll wash their hands personally. They'll get water. They'll not allow them to get up from the place. They'll wash their hands and they'll ask them to wash their mouth also in the same. They'll get a big bowl or something. And then they will lift the plate. They'll not allow them to do that. And then they'll give them dakshina. And then if the devotees allow, they'll massage the feet of the devotee. And they'll fan, throughout when this prasadam they're honoring, at that time they fan with chamar. They'll fan. Literally, they treat the devotee as God himself, as Krishna himself. So in this way, we need not do all this. I'm just saying what it is done, devotees do. So menially, the husband and wife, they have to serve the devotees when they come home. They have to receive them. They have to feed them nicely. And they have to lift the plate themselves. And we have to clean their plates. We have to clean the place where they have sat. We shouldn't allow the devotees who have come home to do any service. Like this, we take a very, very low position and then we serve. By this, what happens is, even when the person is very rich, the person is doing very well, having good name, fame, prestige in the society, he's taking a lower position. So he becomes humble automatically. So this way, this is the dharma that is given. And anyone who follows the dharma is safe. Is safe, right? So Amrish Maharaj, being a grahastha, is following the dharma. Even when it comes to this Lord Ramchandra, when he appeared, so Dashrath Maharaj, It is described for the entire month he was giving charity. Entire month. When Krishna appeared in the house of Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj was giving charity, you know, throughout. Many, many days it went on. And Krishna appeared actually in the jail at that time to Vasudev. So what Vasudev did was nothing was there. So he mentally gave charity to many, many brahmanas. Some many, many crores of cows he gave in charity mentally. So mentally also we can do. But the thing is, if you are capable, we should do it physically. Aisa nahi ki, you know, mentally we invite devotees, mentally we cook, mentally we feed. So at that time we should mentally eat only that particular day. Right. So now in this way, you know, he did all this and now is about to break the Ekadashi fast. This was the next day, Dwadashi, in that particular Murta, he was about to break the fast. And at that time, a Atithi comes. Atithi, basically, Tithi means scheduled or invited. Atithi means the one who is not invited. So Atithi came. So now here Atithi is Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni is known for his anger. Once he becomes angry, the other side, the opposite person, you know, is gone. He cannot do anything. He'll be cursed. So everyone is scared of Durvasa Muni. Everyone. Throughout the scriptures we see. So this personality has come now. Now look at what Amrish Maharaj is doing and how Amrish Maharaj is receiving Durvasa Muni. After standing up to receive Durvasa Muni, King Amrish offered him a seat and paraphernalia of worship. Then sitting at his feet, the king requested the great sage to eat. And then in the next verse, Durvasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Amrish, but to perform the regulative ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Yamuna. There he dipped into water of auspicious Yamuna and meditated upon the impersonal Brahman. Now see, this Durvasa Muni also is a different character altogether. Now when he's invited to have prasadam, he should eat, right? So this person, firstly see how Amrish Maharaj is receiving. This is how we have to receive devotees and other people at our home, all the pious people at our home. So in different yugas, different boards were put outside the house. So Atithi Devo Bhava. Atithi is equivalent to God. So Satyuga, Tretyuga, these they were following. Shublab, this was the board. In Kaliyuga, you will not find any of the board like this. Only board that you will find is beware of dogs. This is the low level that we all have come to. Beware of dogs. In fact, we don't want anyone to come to our home. Now we see that when the door is knocked, the first thing that we do is we look from the hole. Who has come? Yes. And then nowadays we have the camera also outside. And the person will ask from inside only, who is this? What is the job? And then I've seen some people open the door like this little and asking, kya hua? And close it immediately. So in this way, this is how in Kali Yuga people are received. And in fact, if a person comes without calling, that say some of our relative or our parents or whoever for that matter, they come without calling us. Then as soon as the person comes, the first thing comes in the mind, who has called? Who has called this person? I didn't call. And both husband and wife looking at each other. Did you call? And the telepathy is going on now. I didn't call. Why they have come? And it'll go on. It'll go on. Yes. And there'll be a fight also if needed. The point that I'm trying to make is how our culture has gone degraded. That is the point that I'm making. See, now when we are blaming our next generation, the kids, that they're not listening to us and they're not cultured and so on and so forth, it is not because of they themselves. It is because we have not given them the exposure to the culture of India. We might say, I was not like you in my childhood. I used to follow each and every statement of my father because you saw your father following your grandfather. So you were able to see and you were able to follow. But now when it comes to the kids in this small house, one of my relative, they had come to our house and they were saying, this house is like a matchbox when you look from outside. I don't want to stay in this matchbox. So in this small house, in this nuclear family of three people, before it was hum do hamare do. Now it has become hum do hamara ek. And now, in future for sure, with this live-in relationship, hum do hamara koi nahi. This is what has come. Now, in this nuclear family, how do you expect that the kids will learn the culture? There are no grandparents to teach. And where are they seeing that what to say, that relationship of respecting. Like, for example, suppose parents are there and we're respecting the parents, automatically the kids or our subordinates will learn that. How do we learn our devotee etiquettes? When we see that devotees dealing with senior devotees, suppose our superiors dealing with their superiors, then we understand, oh, okay, this is how we have to do. And this is how we have to serve. And then when our superior comes, we start dealing with them like that. Now, same with the kids. They don't know what to do. We just keep giving them theory. I was doing like this. I was doing like that. I was listening to all the statements of my parents. You are not doing. Actually, your kids are sober. They don't say that. You are following all the instructions of your parent, and I'm not following because you're not like your parent. Right? Like, you're not as sober as your parent. You're following your parent because your parent was sober. But I'm not following you because you're not like your parent. They're not saying all this because they're humble. So one thing that we have to understand is this culture is getting degraded day by day. So this culture has to be brought back if you want your kids to learn. If you want our kids to learn all these etiquettes, then this culture has to be brought back. And that's what we do when devotees come home. We engage the kids, you know, in doing the service. Then we ourselves do. And we receive the guests like that and so on and so forth. Now suppose, you know, our parents come home and then husband and wife, they're fighting. Who called? I didn't call. And this and that, etc., etc. And then there's no proper dealing from our side to our parents. Just imagine the samskara that is given to the kids. And when this samskara goes to the kids, rest assured, that's what they will do with you also. That's what, suppose we go to our kids' house in near future, when they will get married and things like that. This is what they will do. They will start fighting. Who invited this old person? And so on and so forth. So how do we receive people and how do we serve them is a samskara that we have to give to our kids. It's not about sending them to school and paying 2 lakhs of fees every year. That's okay. That's one part. No doubt about it. We have to do it so that they earn their livelihood. But more important than that is to give them culture, which is not there now. You analyze. If we just analyze ourselves, yes, we have to speak so much about service. Have you seen? We speak so much about service from Bhagavatam. We should do service. We should do service. This was very normal. When it comes to Indian culture, this was very normal. As soon as someone, some senior comes not to our house, we pay obeisance. We touch their feet. We take their blessings. And then as soon as someone comes, first thing that we do is, so now whenever anyone comes home, first thing is we receive them. It's not that from the door only we start asking, what happened? Why did you turn? No, how come you're here today? We first receive them home. We give them a seat. Like Amrish Maharaj did. He received Durvasa, who was an Atithi, an uninvited guest. And then obviously, if you know the person, we can invite him home, get him inside. In the Kali Yuga, we cannot follow the Satyuga principles. But if we know the person, we invite the person first and then give him a seat. And before talking, we give water and we speak kind words. And then after that, we ask that, it's so nice you have come to our place after a long time. So any particular reason, how can we serve you? So in this way, we address the person. Now there is nothing doing. Now there's standing meeting that happens. We are so used to with corporate culture. 5 minute standing meeting. As soon as Atithi also comes, standing, all the talks done. And then when we understand why that person has come, and if we feel that is beneficial to us, then we'll make them sit, give them some water and whatever. So if this is the culture that we're giving to our kids, then forget it. That we will ever have a good hospitality when we go to their home, when they get married and settled. So this is an alarm for all of us. Alarm for all of us that this culture has to be revived. And since we are a nuclear family, we have to make sure we invite people home. We invite devotees home. And we do this. If we follow this etiquette. And by seeing this etiquette, at least the kids will learn, oh, this is how we have to deal with our superiors. So this is a very, very important point. All of us have to make a note of it in bold letters. We have to revive the culture. And if we don't revive the culture, we're ruining our own self. So this is what Amrish Maharaj did. Amrish Maharaj invited Durvasa Muni. He didn't talk to Durvasa Muni anything. First thing that he did was he gave him a seat. And then, he started talking to Durvasa Muni. And where did Amrish Maharaj sat? Since Durvasa Muni is a renunciant, he was given a high place to sit. And since Amrish Maharaj is a grihastha, he sat down and he started talking. He took a humble position and he started talking, you know, to this renunciant who has come home, Durvasa Muni. And then after all this, Amrish Maharaj is still fasting. He's still fasting. He has not eaten anything. Now what happens? Amrish Maharaj is requesting Durvasa Muni that you please first eat something. And after that, I'll be breaking my fast. But Durvasa Muni is a next level entity. So what he did was he told Amrish Maharaj, okay, I'll accept, but let me go and have bath first. And then he's saying that, you know, after taking bath, then I'll come and I'll have prasadam that you serve. But what this personality did was, Durvasa Muni, he went to take bath, he's dipped in the river, and then he's chanting prayers. So there is a way to take bath in the river. We'll discuss sometime later. So he did that. Durvasa Muni was doing that. But the thing is, Durvasa Muni was taking bath for a longer time than usual. Don't know if it was purposely. He was doing that. He was taking bath for a long time. And now what is happening is, Amrish Maharaj has fasted for Ekadashi for one complete year he has done. And now, you know, this particular Ekadashi is there. So on this Dwadashi day, he has to break the fast in that Murta. So Amrish Maharaj is in now ambiguity, perplexity. He's not understanding what to do. Now Atithi has come. So now without feeding Atithi, I cannot eat. And the other thing is, now if I don't eat, then I'll not get the benefit of fasting. My vrata will remain incomplete. What should I do? This is the question which Amrish Maharaj is getting. Now, whenever there's a question, so now Amrish Maharaj is not opening his internet and Googling, you know, to see what can be done. He's calling for all the brahmanas. He's calling all the devotees and he's asking, what should I do now? That is what is the next shloka. Text 38. In the meantime, only a muhurta of Dwadashi day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, the king consulted learned brahmanas. The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior towards the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadashi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with brahmanas, the king reached this decision. For according to brahmanical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. So now this is for the ones who are doing Nirjala Ekadashi. Okay, the ones who are not drinking water on the day of Ekadashi. So for them, you know, this is mentioned. So there are people, there are some devotees. So they do Nirjal but drink a lot of juice. So for them, the definition of Nirjal is not clear. Nirjal for them is not drinking water, but they can drink and they can eat anything else. So Nirjala, we have to understand, means not drinking water, not eating anything, not drinking anything also along with that. And we have seen that people, they fast according to their own whims. Now, even Ekadashi also, I've seen, there are some Hindu people, they also follow this Ekadashi just because it's coming in the parampara of their family. So, but they have their own way of fasting. They'll fast in the morning and have food in the evening. And then some people will, eat in the morning, fast in the evening. Evening fasting is easy, you know, you go to sleep. So like this, it doesn't work. So what is given in Shastra? We have to fast, drink tea. Yes. So tea is allowed. I have also seen this in my childhood days when I used to fast. Even I used to drink tea during fasting. Because I saw my superiors doing it. So I was also doing that. So all this nonsense is done. In fact, once it happened in my house, my father invited a brahmana to do some puja. And now, unfortunately or fortunately, I was already practicing bhakti in ISKCON. So now he came and then I was already suspicious. Now which parampara he belongs to? Is he a really good brahmana? He was wearing pant shirt. And then I was thinking, he's not wearing dhoti kurta. How can he do some ritual? So many questions were coming. And then I got water to him because that's what is our culture. You know. So first we made them sit. We got him water. And then he said, no, I'm fasting nirjala. Why? I was very happy. I said, okay, chalo, some qualification he's meeting. He's fasting. There's some Navratri time that was. So he's doing some nirjala for that. Then I kept the glass and I came out. This person, I've told this in some of the Gita course also. This person, he removed something from the pocket. He put it in his hand and I put it in the mouth. He ate tobacco. And then I was looking at him. Bah, pray. You know, Nirjala. But in Nirjala, this is allowed. According to him, this was allowed. Krishna. So we need our Shastra. You know, we cannot just follow what is coming in Parampara. So everyone is drinking tea, so we'll also drink tea. Here, now there's a question for Amrish Maharaj. Now I have to break fast. How to break fast? There is a question that is coming up. So now here we see that a person who is doing Nirjala, so when he drinks water, the fast is broken. But at the same time, drinking water is considered as breaking fast. At the same time, it is considered as not eating. So it is in between. He has broken fast and he has not broken fast. So according to Shastra, he has broken fast. But when it comes to receiving the Atithi, he has not broken fast because he has not eaten anything. So here comes the significance of taking guidance. So he asked all the Brahmanas what to do. And the Brahmanas gave this very nice suggestion, drink water. When you drink water, it is considered as breaking fast and you complete your vow. At the same time, you're not offending the Atithi who has come home. So in this way, he did that. So let's see the purport what Prabhupada is saying. When Maharaj Amrish in his dilemma consulted the Brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnav, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Amrish himself decided in the presence of the Brahmanas that he would drink a little water, for this would confirm that the fast was broken but would not transgress the laws for receiving a Brahmana. In the Vedas, it is said, Aposhnati tan naivashitam naivanashitam. So, naivashitam and naivanashitam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or not as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experience, we see that some political leader adhering to Satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Amrish decided to act in this way. In fact, when Prabhupada gives a class on this particular topic, he goes so heavy. He says that these people who do Anshan Vrata in front of the media, they're fasting and pale face, etc. And they'll go behind the stage and they'll drink wine and eat flesh. What sort of fasting these people are doing? So he goes on very heavy. Now, this is done. So he has taken care that he has broken his fast. Now what happens after Amrish Maharaj comes? Text 41. Oh, best of the Kuru dynasty, after he drank some water, King Amrish, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, waited for the return of the great mystic Durvasa Muni. So now Amrish Maharaj is still not eating. He is waiting. That after executing the ritualistic, text 42, after executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of Jamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects, but Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Amrish had drunk water without his permission. Now Durvasa Muni, what he does? Text 43. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved, and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Amrish, who stood before him with folded hands. Alas, text 44. Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of the Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. Now, Durvasa Muni is doing too much over here. Amrish Maharaj has followed what is given in Shastra. But here Durvasa Muni is acting on behalf of the Lord. Our Lord is making him act. Because see, in this world we have to understand, no one can do anything, any activity without the sanction of the Lord. So Lord has sanctioned his behavior here. So he's doing that. And the Lord is trying to teach something. He's giving a message here throughout this pastime. So Durvasa Muni, you see, when a person goes crazy, when a person goes angry, he doesn't understand what he's doing. And we have discussed this very elaborately on Sunday. And here, there's an example for that. So now just imagine, What did Amrish Maharaj do? He just drank water. Big deal. But Durvasa Muni is taking it as an offense. At times, you know, people speak something to us. No, you're like this, you're like that. And we take it so, not to our heart. And we keep a grudge on the other person. But now you tell me, when a person speaks, what is the big deal? Has he killed us? Has he harmed us in any way? He has just spoken. And it has not even touched our body. It has just the speech, you know, it has come out. But still we go crazy. So now if we say that Durvasa Muni is doing too much over for Amrish Maharaj's behavior of drinking water, then similar thing is valid to us. We also do too much overly. When someone speaks something to us, some bitter words, and we take it to our heart and keep the grudge, and we become angry. And sometimes people take a vow. I'll never talk to you in my entire life. Even if you die, I'll not come to see your face. Anyways, you have never seen his face because he's spirit soul. You've just seen the body. And then he says, so Prabhupada is writing here, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by Durvasa Muni. So now, see, when a Sanskrit verse is there, so Saraswati Devi, you know, she speaks something, you know, through the mouth of that person, and she is meaning something else, and there is other meaning also. So now, what is the meaning that Saraswati Devi wants to give? Nir Sham Shayaha, to indicate that king was cruel, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets it to mean that king's character was glorified by all local people. He says that word Nri means by all local people, and that Samshaya means of he whose character was glorified. Similarly, one who is very rich becomes mad because of his wealth and is therefore called Shriya Unmatasya. Unmatasya, yes. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets these words to mean that although Amrish Maharaj was such an opulent king, he was not mad after money. The word Isha Maaninaha is interpreted to mean that he was so respectful to the respectful Supreme Personality of Godhead that he did not transgress the laws of observing Ekadashi Parana despite the thinking of Durvasa Muni, for he only took water. In this way, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has supported Amrish Maharaj and all his activities. So here we see that, Amrish Maharaj, whatever he's saying, Amrish Maharaj is not that. It is because of the anger, you know, which is there. He's saying all this. First, he's saying that being proud of his material opulence and his position. Now, Amrish Maharaj is very humble. He took a very, very lower position. The next he says, he considered himself God. Or he was a devotee. Why will he consider himself God? And then third, how can he transgress the laws of religion? Now, where has he transgressed the laws of religion? He has not transgressed any laws. But still he is considered like that. Kumar Swami Prabhu, please mute. So in this way, you know, we see that when we are angry, you know, people go crazy. People go crazy. And then he says, text 45. Maharaj Amrish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. We'll take this verse tomorrow also and we'll discuss. Now there's a big suspense which is there. What Durvasa Muni is going to do? For no offense of Amrish Maharaj. Amrish Maharaj has not done anything, but Durvasa Muni has got angry and he's a great mystic. He's a great yogi. He has got a lot of powers and he can do anything. Even he can go to the extent of murdering a person. So we'll see tomorrow this particular text again, text 45, and we'll continue from here. From tomorrow actually starts the actual pastime of Amrish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. That's a very nice twist and turn. So let me take up the questions now. If you have questions, please post. So before I take up questions, some announcements I would like to do. So tomorrow we'll have this session on Amrish Maharaj. And on second, that is Thursday, it is Ram Navami. So we'll be celebrating Ram Navami online. So we'll have a class on Lord Ramchandra. And more than Lord Ramchandra, we'll discuss about his devotees. And we'll try to understand how can we gain such qualities. So we'll celebrate Ram Navami on Zoom on Thursday. Okay, so let me take questions. Prabhu, was Vigras... Okay, I answered this. Is ISKCON Hinduism? See, firstly, there's nothing called as Hinduism. This is a word that was coined by Mughals. Anyone who's across the river Sindhu, he was called as Hindu. So, and then it became, in daily usage, in local, in colloquial terms, this was the term that was used in Hindu. So, one thing we have to understand is the religion that is given in Shastra is called as Sanatan Dharma, eternal religion. Hindu, is just a faith. So, I might have faith in Hinduism, but my faith can change tomorrow, to Christianity or Islam. But our eternal religion is same, that our eternal religion is Sanatan Dharma is, we are servant of Krishna and we have to serve Krishna. This is our eternal religion. So, when it comes to ISKCON, now we are following Shastra, and Shastra says that our dharma is Sanatan Dharma. So we are following Sanatan Dharma and not Hinduism. Obviously, now what we follow in Sanatan Dharma, that's what is taken in Hinduism. But when it comes to Hinduism, just Hinduism, it is just a subset of Sanatan Dharma. This is what we have to understand. In many of the pastimes, many rishis, example, Durvasa Muni gets angry if the host doesn't meet the expectation. And anger is a demonic quality. How do we take this? Yes, many, many pastimes is there. See, this one thing we have to understand is that this particular aspect of great people becoming angry for small, small things, we have to understand that this is an act of the Lord through them to teach something. So wherever the great personalities have got angry unnecessarily, so there, we understand that in this act or in this action of anger, Lord is trying to set some example there. And in this Amrish Maharaj pastime, we'll get to know what is Lord trying to tell. So after this pastime, if it is not clear, we can take up this question. But Lord wants to teach in all the pastimes where great people are getting angry or lusty or greedy. Then we can understand that something is there for Lord to teach. And also another thing is, these great people have become angry only few times. And so it has been recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can imagine their level. Only few times they have got angry. Yes. And when it comes to us, almost every time, almost every now and then we get angry. So our names are not there in Bhagavatam. And our leelas are not mentioned in Bhagavatam. So if someone's name is mentioned in Bhagavatam, then he's a very great personality. And Lord is using him as an instrument to portray something and to teach something to conditioned souls like us. So this is what is the thing that we have to take, from this particular or this is the understanding, that we should have when a great personality gets angry. Okay. Isn't also not safe to let anyone inside home in Kali Yuga? Our relative or dear one, we can do Atithi Devabha. Yes, that's what I said. If we know the person, we can allow the person inside. Before, in fact, in the start of Kali Yuga, anyone who comes to any village, that person will be invited home and he'll be fed prasadam very nicely. Because, the duplicitous nature was very less at that time. But now there's so many criminals going around. You cannot just invite anyone and everyone home. You might feed prasadam and he might also give us prasadam. Yes. He'll send us go back home by killing us. So you take care. Now we should be in Kali Yuga, we should be intelligent to follow the etiquette also. So when we know someone, we know a relative or a friend or anyone who's coming home, we can do this. We can follow this hospitality principles. You mentioned all acts have to be sanctioned by the Lord. Are all demonic activities in Kali Yuga also sanctioned by the Lord? Yes. Lord only sanctions all the activities. Even the demonic activities, all are sanctioned by the Lord. And I have answered this in one of our Gita course session. So now, there are three things those are involved, or three entities involved. Jiva, that is we, Paramatma, that is the Lord, and Prakriti, that is the nature. Jiva, only he desires. We can just desire. And if suppose we have good karma credits, Lord will just sanction. And when it comes to Prakriti, Prakriti will manifest all that. It's almost like going to a restaurant. We have a desire and we place the order. And then, it is sanctioned, or Prakriti is manifesting, and it was sanctioned at the counter. The counter, basically the person is acting as the Paramatma. So we have placed the order, it was sanctioned, and the Prakriti as a waiter, she gets and she manifests. So now here, one thing we have to understand is that when it comes to non-devotees, without second thought, if the karma credits are there, Krishna just sanctions. Still, as Paramatma will tell in the heart, don't do this activity, this is not good. But if the person intensely desires that particular thing, Krishna has no option but to sanction, because he loves each and every living entity unconditionally. There is no condition to it. Unmotivated love Krishna has, you know, for all of us. So even if the person desires a cigarette, and if that is there in his karma credits are there, good punya he has done, Krishna will just sanction, go ahead and do this papa. Krishna sanctions. So a person desired to have cigarette, Krishna sanction. Prakriti, she will drag the person, she will take him to the shop, and through the agency of the shopkeeper, you know, he'll get the cigarette, and Prakriti will help him to lit the cigarette with the other hand, and she will help him to put it in the mouth, and she will help, you know, to smoke, and then smoke the smoke very nicely. Yes. Or give out the smoke very nicely, whatever. So in this way, we see that because of the unconditional love of the Lord towards all the living entities, especially to the ones who are not surrendered to Krishna, he just sanctions without any second thought. Initially, as Paramatma, he'll give that feeling. He'll tell not to do. If they are not listening, if they have intense desire, Krishna just sanctions. That's how all the activities are happening. Even demonic activities are sanctioned by the Lord. Not even a blade of grass can move without Krishna's sanction. This is what we have to understand. But when it comes to devotees, the ones who are surrendered, there Krishna doesn't see what the person is desiring. He will see, if I sanction this, will he progress in bhakti or not? Will he come back to me or not? This is a privilege which only devotees have. For non-devotees, you know, Lord is like, okay, do whatever you want. He is ignoring. But for devotees, for a magnifying glass, he keeps seeing what this person is desiring. And then if he desires something which is not proper, Krishna will not sanction. It is given in one of the shloka. I'm not remembering the Sanskrit. Very nice shloka it is. You know, it says that you know, whatever a devotee desires, Lord will fulfill. But then second line says, if that particular desire gives rise to another desire, Lord will not fulfill. And then the next line says that anyone who comes to the Lord with any desire, Lord will fulfill the desire if that desire does not give rise to another desire. But along with that, even if he doesn't desire bhakti or his lotus feet, Lord gives him the lotus feet or he gives him bhakti. Anyone who approaches Krishna will, you know, will get bhakti. This is what the Lord is saying. Yes. But then another thing that we have to understand is initial bhakti Lord gives. Okay, initial bhakti he gives. But when it comes to Krishna prema, you know, bahut sare papad velne padenge. Literally, the devotee has to slog, cry, beg, oh Lord, I want you, I want to attain you. And then finally, Lord will, you know, he'll look at after testing. See, till now, we have tested the Lord throughout. We have desired and he has become a puppet in our hand. When we become devotees, we are puppet in his hands. Right? So this is the understanding. Hope this answers your question. I can speak on this topic a lot, but you know, time is up. So let me go for another question. What can be done if we miss the fast during breaking Murta? Should we break the fast immediately or continue fasting on Dwadashi? So you'll fast till next Ekadashi? See, in Kali Yuga, we are faulty living beings. If something happens like this, we just beg the Lord, we ask pardon, oh Lord, please forgive me, and we have prasanna. We don't go into all these things. Yes. See, we are Kali Yuga Jivas. You know, there's a tendency to forget what to do. We should try our best to break in Parana time, but suppose we are not able to, it's now what to do? We beg the Lord forgiveness. We tell him, see, I'm a Kali Yuga Jiva, O Lord. Yes. And you didn't give remembrance. It's your fault. So we have to beg forgiveness and then break the fast. In Sanatana Dharma, is marriage concept there? Only in Sanatana Dharma, marriage concept is there. No other place it is there. All these other religions are just the subsets of Sanatana Dharma. So, Sanatana Dharma gives an elaborate procedure of marriage. Now, marriage happens only one day. According to Shastra, marriage happens, you know, almost for 5-6 days continuous. Lot of rituals have been cut down now. Lot of rituals have been cut down. Did Durvasa Muni miss to break his Ekadashi fast? Don't know. He might have drunk water while taking bath. I'm not sure, bro. It is not mentioned here. There are some people, you know, who I've heard this. that they do Nirjala Ekadashi to show off to others that I'm not drinking water. They'll again and again go and take bath in the river. When they dip inside, they'll nicely drink water and come out. So I don't know what Durvasa Muni. What to do, Prabhu, if anyone are loving devotees and again, loving, devoted and service-centered, but others and closed ones too may not understand the depth of these actions.
We can
just pray to the Lord, nothing else. And we cannot expect people around to understand us, always remember. Because people around us, they are also driven by material nature. So depending on their karma, depending on their which current mode they are in, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, they'll act accordingly. So they might not understand, you know, what we are going, or what we are doing. But then as devotees, we have to be matured enough to help them out to do bhakti. It's not that we start ignoring them, we start chastising them. Teko kuch nahi aata hai, dekh, you know, I'm such a great devotee. So one thing we have to understand is if we have such people around, we should drive them, you know, with us. This especially happens with spouses. If suppose husband is a devotee and wife is not, wife is a devotee, husband is not, we start ignoring either of them or ignoring the parents or whatever. One thing we have to understand is we have to do our bhakti very nicely, intensely. At the same time, we should drive these people also towards bhakti or without chastising them. And also always we have to remind ourselves, we are not pure devotees. We are fallen. Little bit the bhakti we are practicing. Only when we see Krishna, we have authority to chastise someone. I mean, you know, people who are close to us and whose authority we are not. Right? So this is what is the understanding which I have. Why Durvasa Muni was meditating on impersonal light? Yes. So Durvasa Muni, he is a devotee, but at the same time, he's a mixed devotee. So he's a Gyani category also. So he was meditating on Brahman. Durvasa Rishi gave curse only when anyone fell from dharmic path. Is it true? Yes. Yes. Many times. In fact, here also in one of the Purana, it is given in this particular pastime of Amrish Maharaj. Durvasa Muni was thinking that Amrish Maharaj has not received the Atithi properly. And since he's the king of the entire world will follow him. So better, you know, I prove this very nicely by giving him a curse that this is a mistake. So, no. There's another angle also given to this, but that angle Bhagavatam doesn't give. Another Purana gives this angle. Your question about Mughals destroying deity, probably I missed. Could you explain, Prabhu? So the deities have come just to accept our service. They have not come to exhibit their prowess, they exhibit their power. So that is the reason, you know, even when the Mughals are coming and they're doing something nonsense, the deities are not doing anything. So the deities are like small kids. So it's our responsibility. It's not the Mughals' mistake. They came and they broke the deity. It's our mistake. We didn't take care of the deities properly. So the sin will come to us, not to the Mughals. They'll also get some, but we'll get the most.